Hey everyone, it's Dimpney here. I've got a little bit of a croaky voice, I'm afraid, so you're going to have to see if we can deal with that throughout the next hour or so. I'm actually in Adelaide at the moment, and the reason I'm doing this one is because Ian is on stage in Canberra. So we'll be missing all of our Canberra students because presumably they'll be in talking to Ian. All right, well, let's get going. Tonight, of course, is a Q&A webinar. So we're going through all of the questions that have been sent in. Now, first question here is a bit of a long one, so I'll read it out to you. I have been going through the process of getting an approval for 3 dwellings and 2 granny flats on a multi-lot block in Western Sydney. However, it now looks like the council is rezoning my block and the surrounding area from R2 to R3, which means a townhouse development. My architect says should be able to fit 7 by 2 to 3 bedroom townhouses on my block. I am just trying to work out at this stage if it's worth waiting and building the townhouses instead. I think I have a pretty good handle on the various costs involved in the approval and construction of individual dwellings, granny flats. But my question is, what additional budget items would be involved in a 7 townhouse development, which I have not thought about in my budget for individual dwellings? Also, what are the main opportunity cost factors that I need to think of that could make it less or not feasible? At the moment, it looks like they are looking to get the rezoning gazetted by January 2015, which means they probably want to build early to mid 2017. They probably won't be built until mid to 17. And I probably won't have enough cash to do anything during that time. So how do I work out how much profit cash flow I need to make that wait worthwhile? All right. Well, first of all, let's talk about the additional costs, because that was your first question. What are the additional costs? Well, one of the things that varies from council to council, and you're going to have to check this out with your local town planner, but one thing that can vary is when you have more titles, as in 7 strata titles as opposed to 3 Torrens titles, there can be an extra charge at the council. Now, look, it is mainly a Queensland thing where you can be paying up to $28,000 per block. Now, that's not necessarily per block, but it could be per strata as well. So just check that out with your town planner. He or she is going to be the person in that local council that will be able to give you a definitive answer on that one, Pierre. As far as the construction process goes, look, a 7-unit townhouse, you know, it's the same basic process as building a house and granny flats. You know, you've got to cost out your construction. You've got to, you know, I would prefer if you don't have if you haven't done this before and got a lot of experience behind you, I would much prefer that you get a turnkey contract, because that way you know what you're going to be up for. Whenever you do contracts like that, make sure that you've got that you really know what's inclusive and what the exclusions are in your contract, because you know, there's a lot of things, even like an extra PowerPoint can be cost you like another $100 and things, or even more sometimes. So make sure that, you know, your plans are absolutely what you want them to be, and that you have, that you've absolutely, got it the way you want it before you sign the contract and lock yourself in. A few little things to watch out for are things like overruns and who bears the cost of the overruns. And who has, for time delays and things like that. Contracts in Australia are not as severe as contracts in Europe, as an example, where any overruns in time really come back to the person and the individual contractor, and they have to, you know, if they don't meet the time frames, they will actually be penalised, and there's a penalty written into the contract. We don't have a lot of that here, but it is something that, you know, you can try and negotiate, but because it's not commonplace, it's something that you'll probably get some opposition from the contractors here in Australia. So as far as the process goes, probably not a lot from the building process. Get your fixed quotes and make sure you talk to your town planner about any additional charges that may need to go through to council. There could also be with a unit development more of a requirement to upgrade services to the council. But again, the town planner will actually be able to go through all of those things with you. The biggest issue with going from a house and granny flat scenario through to a 7-unit townhouse is money and financing it, because immediately now you're not in residential lending, you're in commercial lending. It is a lot harder to get money to go and build 7 townhouses than it is to go and build 3 individual house and granny flats. And you really do need to talk to the guys from ILN about that, as to whether you are strong enough as an applicant to be able to handle it. Now, I'm not going to know that from here, but the guys from Investor Loans Network certainly will. And, they're the ones that you really should be talking to about that. There may also be another alternative for you if you did want to proceed with the 7 units, is that you may be able to do them in stages, particularly since you've already got separate titles with the there now. You may be able to build, a 2 and a 2 and a 3 as an example. Now, that would mean you'd then be in residential lending, and it would also mean that it would be much easier to finance, and you could do it in stages. Now, look, I don't know whether that's possible or not, but it's certainly something that you could look at. And I don't know whether that's even something that you can do with the current zoning. But again, your town planner's the one to talk to about all of that kind of stuff. So here's your first point of call on that. As far as the feasibility goes, you know, you've got to, you just got to go through exactly the same way that you would have otherwise, and cost out every little item as you go along. So, get your feasibility there, get a double check by the town planners, make sure that you haven't left out any obvious engineering issues or anything like that. Talk to the, get the builder to run his eye over any of the other stuff as well. Make sure that you've absolutely locked everything in. That's the way to do it. But I got to tell you, financing is going to be the issue. You may have to have pre-sales before they'll even give you the financing to build the units, which, you know, presents another level of complexity. You've got to look at the market and all of that kind of stuff at that time. So, look, I would probably get in and do what you can now. And what I would do, though, if you know that the zoning is coming along, what you might be able to do is to go in now and secure similar blocks to yours on options. Now, that way, you know, when the rezoning, or if the rezoning actually happens, you're going to have blocks ready to go that perhaps then you can go and do 7-unit developments on, or 6-unit developments on, et cetera, et cetera. So try and tie up a few blocks on option agreements, so that you don't have to pay for them now. You obviously, you've got the right to pull out of them if they're call options, and go back and review all the literature on options, because that would be a great way to hedge your bets each way. You know, it'd give you the opportunity to do your developments now, get it underway, and probably have it done and sold or rented or whatever you want to do with those houses right now, and still have the opportunity to go and perhaps do a unit development further down the track when the zoning happens. So if you know that kind of information, that's where options really come into play, and they're very, very useful. So I hope that helps you, Pierre. All right, the next question says, hi, Ian. Well, you haven't got Ian, you've got me. And me with a cold, I'm afraid. All right, if I sell a property held in a trust, can I use the full amount I received from this sale to buy another property? Or first, I need to distribute profits, sale price minus the purchase costs, etc., price and costs, in the same way that I have to distribute income in case of positive gearing. Who is the one that has to pay the GST, the trust or the beneficiary, another trust, an individual or a bucket company? And if I buy a block of units, strata them and sell one of these units, can I keep this money in the same trust to reduce debt, or because I made a profit, I have to distribute it? All right, there's a lot of questions in there. So let's get back up to the first question. What are you going to do? You're going to sell something in a trust. Do you have to distribute it? The trust in the case of positive gearing. Hang on, or first, do I need to distribute this? If I want to receive it from the sale to buy another property. Oh, you want to buy another property. Okay. All right. Well, at the end of the year, the trust has to account for its income. So in the tax return, it is going to have income in the in its tax return. Now, before the end of the financial year, you have to distribute that income. And distributing that income means that, you know, you have to make a minute, you do a decision to say that the income from the trust is going to be distributed to somewhere. You can actually not distribute the income, but I don't advise it, because if you don't distribute the income, you're going to be, that trust is going to be assessed at full marginal tax rates, like in the top marginal tax rate. So, you know, that's something that you don't want to happen. It is much, much better to have the trust distribute the income. Now, if it's going to a bucket company, you either have to move the money, or you have to do a loan agreement to explain why it hasn't been moved. If you are distributing it to yourself, as an example, it is better still to move the money. But what's actually going to happen is it'll probably be distributed back. You'll be loaning it back to the trust. So it's kind of a distributed out and then distributed in. Now, look, it's not a have to, but I honestly feel it is better if you can transfer the money, even if you just take it out, put it in your bank account, and then put it back in again. That way, at least the money flow shows what's happening on paper. So I'd prefer you to do it that way. It can be done with journal entries, but I'd prefer it not to be. Who is the one that has to pay the GST? Well, I talked about that. The trust can, but you don't want it to. You actually want it to be whoever it's going to. Now, that is going to be the lowest common denominator for tax purposes. It is best, if it's coming out of a discretionary trust, to go to an individual, not a bucket company, because the bucket company doesn't get the benefit of the 50% exemption, whereas if you can get it out to you, the individual, or your wife, your spouse, whatever, then let them pay the tax on it officially, and then it goes back into the trust to go and do whatever else you want to go and do in that trust again if you want to, or put it into a new trust or whatever. The last question there about a unit, if you're selling off a unit and you want to take that money and pay down the debt, the same thing applies. I'd actually physically rather that you distribute it out to you and then put it back into the trust immediately to pay down the debt, because that's what's going to happen on paper. It'll come out to the beneficiary that's going to pay tax on it, and then you're going to put it back in as a loan or a gift or however you choose to do it, and that's how you're going to account for it. So I would rather you did. It's not absolutely essential. The accountants can work it out and do the appropriate journal entries and loan agreements and whatever else. However, it is best if you do, to really show that money flow. All right. Now, the next question down here says, my PBR is guarantor for the investment property under trust. My questions were, if in a situation where there is no PBR, will the bank still lend the money to the trust to buy the property? What they are doing, going, who are they going to ask to be the guarantor? Let's ask, answer that one first. If you've got cash to put in for the deposit plus the costs, that's fine. When they actually lend the money to a trust, they will always take you as the guarantor behind it anyway. So they'll still be looking at your income. They'll still be looking at your serviceability, and they'll still be looking at your ability to be able to pay the loan and whether you've got the equity to go into it, et cetera. Doesn't matter whether the equity is coming out of another property or whether it's coming out of, you know, the sale of shares or whatever else. They're still going to ask for you to be guarantor behind it. So just understand that's what's going to happen. The asset protection is from other people coming in and suing you rather more than, you know, protection from the banks. The biggest protection from the banks is only let them have security over one or a couple of properties at any one time. Certainly don't cross-securitize your home with an investment property if at all possible. Now, sometimes you have to. Sometimes you've got no choice. If it's the only way they're going to give you the money, well, do it, get on and get yourself to a position where you're not going to be forced into that kind of situation. The next part of it says, my PPR is guarantor. Does that mean I need to sell my PPR? No. If I want to sell my PPR, I have to sell the investment property as well. No, that's definitely not the case. What they'll do is, you know, when you want to sell, they'll look at the value of your investment property at that point in time. If it's got enough equity in it at that point in time to service itself, as in it looks, you know, it's got its own serviceability, equity in there, it's 80% or whatever it needs to be, then no, that's fine. They're going to, they'll be able to take that on its own, and they'll be able to, you know, it'll stand alone in its own right. It doesn't need the other property to secure it. if it hasn't, then out of the sale of your house, as an example, you may need to put some cash in to bring it back into the right loan to valuation ratio. Okay. Now the next question here is a bit of a long one. My God, look at the length of it. All right. It says a big question about a duplex deal. We are looking to subdivide a large block of land, keeping the old house on the front, and build a detached duplex on the back. So an old house on the front and a duplex on the back, okay? Each side of the duplex will be 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 1-car. However, by thinking small to win big, we plan to make each side of the duplex a 2-bed unit and a 1-studio, okay? This will give us 4 rental units across the duplex. The property is in New South Wales. Question, in New South Wales, the granny flat laws, from my reading, allow 1 granny flat per land lot. This duplex is on a battle axe block and will be a strata title. So I gather this will not permit each half of the duplex to be rented out to 2 unrelated parties under the granny flat laws. Is this correct? You are correct. You will not be able to do that. In each half, can't we rent out to 2 unrelated parties? I gather if each half can't be rented out to 2 unrelated parties, I gather the way to do it is to create a head lease and allow the tenant to sublease out the other unit. Is this the best way if the granny flat laws are not applicable? Yes, it is. You're absolutely spot on that one. Would this head lease or sublease agreement require council approval? What approvals would it require? Well, actually none. As long as you've got in your lease agreement that they're able to sublease, that's up to them. They can do that. You're only leasing to one party, and consequently that's all that they're going to be looking at there. How would an insurance company look at this. Would I be required to notify them that there is a head lease in effect and the tenant may lease out half the to another party? What would I need to tell the insurance company? Look, you're probably better off to tell them. The likelihood that they refuse the premium is very unlikely. And if you've got it in writing that you've told them and you've got a response back that that's fine, then you've done what you can do, you know. So what I think is better off, yes, get it in writing, tell them what you're doing. It's not going to change your premium, in my opinion. Shop it around a little bit between a few of the insurance companies and see what you get back. Can the head lease be given to another company you own and the other company handle the sublease? This sounds super dodgy, but is it legal? Or can a proper management company take the head lease? Or does it have to be the tenant who takes the head lease? You're talking here about plastic rules, as Ian calls them. And look, technically, I can't see a problem in you having your company have the head lease. However, you really are pushing the limits there a little bit. And I would like you to actually get an opinion on that in the state in which you're in. Okay, so it is a plastic rule. So let's just watch that space a little bit. Finally, if this deal was done in Queensland, yes, we're looking at one there too, I gather it would have to be done with the head lease sublease arrangement. Do the rules apply to Canada? Well, you definitely can't do it in Queensland. It's still head lease sublease. That would still work. If it works in New South Wales, it would work down there too. Okay, now another question from, I guess you say it, Yao, I'm not sure. I have a project about to finalise by the end of the year. The end position was three houses on subdivided land. Eventually, will be rented out and sell them all. Okay, my question was, should I wait for all houses being sold and then start to work on my next project, or I worry the holding costs and cash flow as well? I am not sure what's the best. Okay, to proceed from a cash flow perspective. All right. Well, it really does depend on your financial position. Okay. However, what I'll talk about in general terms is this. There will be a point of time when you've got your finances in place, and maybe you've got pre-sales, maybe you haven't got pre-sales, where you might start to have a look around. It would be advisable that you don't go ahead until such time as you know if the properties weren't sold, then you could handle the next phase, or at least you've got an out. You know, you could get yourself out of the next contract. Something you might like to look at is having an option in place for the next deal. So don't do it, I would say. Well, it depends how long you can get the option. If you can get a nice long option on your next deal that you're lining up, go for it. Make sure it's a call option, which means that you can get out of it if you need to. The second thing is, I would prefer probably to get you put to a point where you've got finance ready to go on what you've got to do before you get excited about another deal, and make sure that you're not running yourself too thin from a management perspective, that, you know, you can afford to, you know, you've got the time to actually do the work and do the sales and everything else that's got to be done to actually complete a project. The last thing you want to be doing is running off and getting excited about the next deal, and you're not finishing what you've already started. Okay, so an option is probably the best scenario there, so that you can you can line another deal up, but you don't have the have to commitment to actually to go on to the next thing. All right. Now the next question here says, I'll just have a cup of tea, a sip of my tea, just hang on. Okay, the next question says, just looking to get an idea on best practice or a good guideline to approaching owners for potential off-market deals. We've done some in-depth grid analysis of some areas in Southeast Queensland, and we are finding the best sites for our strategy splitters, title lifting, small developments, etc., aren't advertised for sale. We have done FISOs on a few and feel we're ready to approach the owners about opening dialogue on possibilities with their properties. We understand that everyone will have different needs and requirements as far as what's in it for them if the deal went ahead. If it's more the initial approach we're looking to get a hand on. We've heard stories where a simple letter in the mail is the best way to make the initial contact. So we are just looking to see what else can work and what sort of wording to use the initial approaches. Okay. I do like the idea of the handwritten letter on, nice paper. It's important to be friendly and not be too pushy and make sure that you advise that you are not a real estate agent. Now, you might write 30 letters and get one person ring back and inquire as to, well, maybe I'd consider selling. The best thing is to indicate that you, you're looking to buy a home in their area. And that you'd be interested in, talking to them if they ever considered selling, that you've driven past their house and you really love it, and that you'd like to discuss the possibility with them, something to that effect. Now, if you did something like that, the people you're going to pick up are the people who hadn't really put it on the market, but, we might sell at the right price kind of thing. If they get a handwritten letter like that, they'll probably ring you up and talk to you. What it won't pick up, though, are the ones that don't want to sell but are prepared to do a joint venture with you to make some extra money. So that's where, you really do need to do a lot more analysis and due diligence around that person's situation. Just hang on a minute. Phew. Sorry, I've got a cold at the moment, so I'm sneezing and croaking at you all. I'm really sorry. So the best thing to do there is to really, go through the, sort of, I'll get back on track. That'll work for somebody who might consider selling, but hadn't really got around to putting on the market or anything like that. However, if somebody is in the situation where they don't want to move, but they'd like an extra $60,000 or $70,000 if they did a joint venture with you, then that's where you've really got to find out the information around them. Find out how old they are, how long they've lived there. Find out if they got any kids. Try and stalk them on the internet and all of that kind of stuff, and really work out what their what their parameters are and what they could do. What situation they might be in. You're trying to kind of guess what kind of situation they might be in. You can do searches on them and actually find out whether they have any defaults or financial problems, or really do a cyber search on them and find out everything you can about them. If you can find any hint at all that there's financial pressure, go and knock on their door. Go and knock on their door and propose something, as a joint venture, as an example, buying it perhaps first, if that's what you want to do, or a seller JV. And this is where, you've just got to have the guts. Some of my platinum students actually, they did some street walking a little while ago just to see how it worked, and just to work out whether they could handle it or not. So, they ended up sitting down having a cup of tea with an old lady for a couple of hours, and she recommended this one and that one, another one, and all the rest of it. So, you know, that's probably the best thing to do, and it's really going to be trial and error, and it's going to be something you're just going to have to get the guts up and give it a go. Okay, another question here. It says, I have another question. Can I lend funds between my associated entities but without charging interest? Is this valid for the ATO? Moreover, can I have an individual lend the deposit to my trust to buy a property but without charging interest? The bank charges me interest because I've increased my debt, but I do not charge interest to my trust. Therefore, I can offset the interest charged by my bank against my salary. Woohoo! Is this appropriate for the ATO? Could you please clarify? The big answer there is no, 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 no. Definitely not. Because, see, the question here is the purpose of the funds. What's the purpose of the funds? And the purpose of the funds was to lend it for no income. So because it's not an income-producing asset, you can't get any benefit from it. So, no. Can't say that one strongly enough. All right, here's the next question. Have been a student for about a year and am finally looking at putting together my first deal. Our current PPR, in our own names of course, pre-me, is on a good block in Perth, and there is currently a lot of development of units around our area as multi-sites are 40 zoning. From discussions with some local agents and other investors, the opportunity may not be there in the future, so we are looking to do a development now while the opportunity is available. Our block is about 900 square metres, and we've been told we can put 8 units on it, 6 two-bedders and 2 one-bedders. We currently have about 400,000K equity in our home, in our property, and we'll need about 1.5 million for construction with a developer who will provide a turnkey service. As it's our first project, I'm prepared to pay a little more for less headaches. I agree with that one, and I'm 100% behind you. We could sell 6 to clear costs or on early stage of FISO, but our goal is to keep 3 units with an estimated $350,000 of debt over the 3 units with a good positive cash flow. We may or may not have to form a JV for serviceability. My question is, what way do you recommend to set up the deal initially to best enable transfer or purchase of the last 3 units into a trust, and would establish the same way if we need to for a JV? An ambitious project for our first deal, I know. And I know you've both said to start small, but thanks to Dimpner's email of the 8th of January, of 8th of April, your first deal, an exception to the rule, and the fact that the developer will be the project manager and we're building turnkey product, I feel it's achievable. Thanks for your feedback. Looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. Okay, see you on Thursday. All right. Look, I agree with you that you should do it first, even though, no, I would normally recommend don't do a big deal like that. In this circumstance, given what you've told me about the opportunity going away, and that actually is often the case, that can well be the case in a lot of scenarios, what I recommend is, yes, get ahead and do it. I absolutely am with you 100% that you should be using a turnkey contract. So, I'd like to say, applaud you on that one. That's great. As for the funding, again, if you can get pre-sales, you probably will not need to use a JV partner. If you can't get any kind of pre-sales, then a JV partner may need to be the case. But what I'd like you to do is to talk to the Investor Loans Network guys about that, about the commercial lending side of that. 8 units is going to be a commercial lend, and I would say you will need pre-sales. So go and listen to all the stuff we've done on pre-sales and selling and doing the brochures and putting a website together. There's lots of webinars up on all that kind of stuff. So I need you to go and listen to all of that sort of thing and get the marketing happening really, really early. Now, as for structure, you've got a couple of scenarios here. We've got a couple of options, What you can do is you could... you could leave it in your own name. Provided the builder has got taking on all of the responsibility of the builder, it's a little bit dangerous, but then I guess it's your only asset that you got out hanging out to dry anyway. And then on completion, obviously then you're going to have 3 units that long term you don't want them in your own name. So you'd have to cost transferring them on completion through to trust structures and work out then what the capital gains tax and GST as not cap yeah capital gains tax GST and stamp duty are going to be. That will probably be higher than if you bite the bullet up front and take the your PPR and sell it for a premium price as high as you possibly can into a trust structure. Now, I know that's going to cost you a little bit more in stamp duty, but what it will do is it will give you a higher cost base for the units when you go and build them and sell some off. That would be my recommended strategy. That way, at the end of it, you've got 3 units that don't have to move, which means the 3 units you won't be paying any GST on. The other ones you will be. So you'll have them GST free. And you'll also have a higher cost base for capital gains tax. So I'd bite the bullet early, get a premium price as you possibly can, for the maximum value of your PPR, and even get the DA through first and then sell it to the development at that price. And yes, it'll cost you more in GST, in stamp duty, but in the long run, it'll actually save you. Do the figures, do your FISOs. And see if you can see which one works out the best. But I think you'll find that it'll definitely work out the best to the way that I've indicated there. Okay, I hope that's helped. And as a JV, that's going to be the best alternative too. If a JV partner comes in, then they're going to want it in a trust structure as well. And it may need to be in a unit trust if they're involved. Or a JV between 2 trusts where you've got your trust and their trust coming together to go and do the deal, and it becomes tenants in common basically. So yeah, that's it. All right, next question we have. I might just crimp that up so I've got a bit more room. We are doing a reno on our new property within Logan City Council. Queensland, which includes converting the garage into a bedroom, laundry to ensuite, and adding a carport. We have had a certifier in, and it should not be a problem to get approved. However, he said any work that is valued at the amount a licensed contractor would charge, not the amount that we will do it yourself, over $11,000, must be done with our owner with an owner builder permit. The work would not cost us much, as we would do most of the work ourselves. However, apparently it is about the actual value, not cost, and that might add up to over $11,000. I have looked it up, and the course online is only $180. The application for the permit is another $400. This is okay, but there is an issue that has me stumped. The permit is specific to the project being carried out, and you can only get one permit every 6 years. Is this correct? And if so, is there a way to get around it? In order to get the certifier approval, he needs to either see the owner builder permit, or we need to sign the application stating the value is less than $11,000. All right, which may or may not be true. That is correct. That is in Queensland, that is definitely the case. In the other states, it's similar, but the rules vary a little bit, so you can look it up for yourself. The thing is, let's look at it. Okay, one of you, not two of you, but one of you goes and gets the owner builder certificate and does it on your property. And yet that ties that person up for 6 months. If in 6 years, I mean, in that period of time, you know, if you really wanted to go and do another one, well, your spouse could go and do it next time and do an owner builder thing. So that's the first thing. Now, and you know, you might have to consider ownership and things like that, where the ownership goes from one to the other and that kind of stuff. But that certainly gives you an opportunity to, you know, get two in that period of time. The other thing is that you might be able to get a friendly builder to lend his license to it, if you had a relative or something. Other than that, you probably won't be able to do that. And, because a builder's obviously, that's their job. They get licenses to cover and insurance and all of that kind of stuff. So that's, you know, there would only be somebody, if it was a relative, I think, that would normally help you out with something like that. So it's not that bad. It is the case. It is what you're going to have to do. And I would, but I'd be talking to the, thinking about it in realistic terms. And the fact is, you know, each of you could go and do it anyway, which probably isn't going to be such a bad thing anyway. So don't get too hung up about it. Just get in and make the money. That's what I recommend. The other thing you could do, I suppose, is get quotes on how much, you know, get builders in to give a quote on what it is. And if you can get quotes less than $11,000, well, you can show that, you know, you got quotes and it's going to be less than $11,000. So, you know, that would then... you can sign the certificate in all due, you know, with all good conscience and say, well, we got quotes and they said it was less than 11,000. Probably not, but it is another alternative. All right, well, that's the end of the questions that I've been sent in. So I thought I'd leave this little quote on your screen for you. I'll take a few questions, but my voice isn't good tonight, so I won't do a whole lot. It says the two most important days in your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why. I like that quote, so I thought I'd leave that on your screen while I answer some of these questions. Okay, now let me just get this up so I can see it bigger. All right, I've got a whole bunch of question marks there. What's the go there? Get rid of all of them first. Okay, the first one says a quick question regarding commercial property. Petrol, petrol station, are these specialty building inspectors for this type of property? Is that the best way to make sure that the tanks, etc., won't be maintenance issues? Look, they definitely are. Building inspectors do that, but there is somebody that inspects. I think it's part of the EPA. You can certainly ring up the EPA or the Environmental Protection Act, and see who they would recommend to come and inspect the tanks, where they are, and they'll certainly give you an indication as to who to go to and make that happen. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head. I've had it done on one of my service stations, but I can't remember for the life of me as to who did it. So ring up the Environmental Protection departments and they'll tell you who to go to and get them inspected so that they're right. I'll delete that question. Okay, the next one here says, re-trust distribution, second question. If a trust has not earned any income, does it still have to make a resolution or minute to say that it won't be distributed? Yes, definitely. And do it before the end of the 30th of June. The next question here it says GST, not GST. Well, there he is. Yeah, I corrected myself on that one. Thanks. Somebody says that they can't hear me. I have tested my speakers. They're okay. Can't help you on that one. I'm sorry. I haven't got any other complaints from anybody else other than somebody called Bill. Sorry, Bill. But you've just clogged up the entire questions. So no one else can actually ask a question because you've asked the same thing over and over and over and over again. It has absolutely frozen my screen. Okay. So one last question before Bill froze my screen. It says, I hope you'll recover from the cold. Thank you. Drink lots of lemon juice and honey. Thank you so much for that, guys. Okay, well, look, I am going to rest my voice. I know it's a little bit early, but Bill has actually asked me the same question about 50,000 times, and it's actually clogged all my questions up, and I can't read any other questions. So, guys, I'm going to have to leave it at that. Sorry about that. Maybe shoot any other questions in. Please email your questions in. Email your questions in to questions@realestatesuccess.com.au because that's where, I'll guarantee that they get answered. Whereas if you type them in on the night, it's a little bit hard sometimes to get through them and we often have technical difficulties. So please email your questions in because that way, they'll definitely get answered. So thanks, guys. I'm going to rest my voice now and I'll catch you again in a couple of weeks. I'll be back to do the next webinar. So thanks heaps, guys, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.